We turn then to the world of sport business and how it became such a big business. Game Changers and Rainmakers is the book. David Stubbley, the author, has joined us. Hi, David.
Hello, Paul.
It's an interesting format because rather than just sort of... you don't just tell the story in a linear way. You look at just sort of big landmarks, big moments, and how we got to where we are, where sport is absolutely huge business globally.
Yeah, and really the sort of narrative is that there were 40 people, the Rainmakers, and 40 moments, which brought us to where we are, which is a trillion-dollar global entertainment business. So it tries to chart back from the 1850s, when sports started to get organised with the old boys' clubs and all that stuff, through to the present day today, where we've got, obviously, a huge, huge global business.
And the kind of players as commercial entities, it goes back... I mean, you've got Sir Stanley Matthews on the cover. I mean, mainly in the context of everybody getting tellies for the coronation, being able to watch that cup final made a huge difference. But also, Matthews, as someone who advertised stuff, sold football boots, sold cigarettes, even though he was a non-smoker.
He was. I mean, he was the Beckham of the day, 1950s. The Wizard of the Dribble, as he was known. And the big game changer was that, you know, he'd never won the FA Cup, made it to the final twice. And the nation got captured by this story because they wanted him to win the FA Cup. And at that time, not many people had tellies. So they all ran into their neighbour's house to watch whether he could, whether he couldn't. 10 million people crammed into people's, you know, houses and pubs or what have you. And then the rest is history. People were then, on the back of them, the coronation, ran out and bought their tellies.
Yeah. Globally, I mean, you talk a lot about Nike and Jordan. And if people watch The Last Dance, they'll know that, you know, that whole story of how he got involved with Nike and just sort of completely turned the brand around, didn't it?
They did. I mean, Nike was nowhere in basketball. They were doing well in running. They tried everything, giving shoes away to rookies, trying to sort of bribe the coaches with this, that and the other.
There's a great documentary on this, on all of this. It's a really interesting story, isn't it?
Brilliant. And then the guy who was charged with basically trying to get their basketball business going said, let's put it all on black. Let's go for this lad. He's just been drafted by the Bulls. I think he's going to be huge. Let's give the whole 500 grand you've given me, Phil Knight, who is the founder of Nike, and stick it on Jordan.
So a real risky thing to do, of course. Yeah.
Massive.
I mean, there's the obvious points like the Premier League and what's happened with the Premier League and the Champions League and stuff. But
Bernie Eccleston gets a mention. I mean, he changed that sport completely.
He really did. And his chip in the game, I mean, he ended up making a couple of $1 billion here, so he did all right out of that. But the book talks about it as being a sort of a lottery ticket. But he bought Brabham F1 in 1971. Jack Brabham was in real trouble. He was one of the sort of heroes of the day. So Bernie buys it for 120 grand, gets himself a seat at the table with all the bigwigs. Next thing you know, he's noodling and becomes obviously the sort of ringmaster of Formula One.
Well, I mean, most people would say it's been to the detriment of sport that we've got here, really, and that, you know, it's no longer just purely a game. You know, it is big business. How do you feel about that? Because you were involved in sport business before on TV, weren't you?
Yeah, started ITV and Channel 4 and then moved into the sort of sports marketing world. I mean, I think there are two arguments to this. I mean, one is we all remember going to see football in the 80s. I mean, it was fun, but it was a bit grim, right? The food was rubbish, the stadiums weren't nice, some of the behaviour wasn't good. So it's a better entertainment experience. But I hear where you're coming from. Are we losing the soul of football a little bit and the connection to community? And that is definitely, I think, an issue that we can all discuss.
I'm quite interested in the acknowledgement section of the book where you talk about one of the main motivations for writing this book was to explain to the next generation of sports marketeers coming into the industry how this brilliant business was created. So a kind of reference book for people.
Yeah, I mean, what I wanted was to hand a book to young people, some of the brilliant people who are coming into this industry. And so if you read that, it'll explain why sport behaves the way it does. Sport doesn't behave brilliantly sometimes, but there are reasons we got here, you know, with various flip of a coin moments. And so, yeah, if you read that, that will take you from 1850 up to the present day and hopefully save you a bit of time.
There's still no substitute for a big star, though, is there? We've seen with darts, with Luke Littler, it's transformed the whole atmosphere of the sport and the money involved and everything. I know it was big before, but it's amazing how one player or one competitor can do that.
Well, I've just been watching Benty in the green room there.
Oh, scoring.
I mean, he's become, you know, he's...
He's not getting more 180s, is he? I mean, he'd love it if you were in there. He's been getting a few recently.
He got a bullseye, actually. He got quite excited about that. But
yeah, right until the pressure's on.
You're right. I mean, there are, on both sides of the fence, in terms of on the pitch, charismatic, flamboyant people, and in business, Rupert Murdoch, Bernie Ecclestone, Rupert Scudamore, all of these people, highly charismatic people, get stuff done and get us excited.
But you said there's maybe a reset's going to be needed. There's a kind of few words of caution. What are your concerns about the way it's going in sport then?
Yeah, I am worried, Paul, for two reasons. One is all of the money is going into football and the big US sports. Mm. And a lot of the smaller sports, and they're not even small, Olympic sports are being left behind in terms of funding and the amount of coverage they get in the media. That's a worry. And then when you look at the big sports, there's a lot of private equity piling into all the big clubs now. I think that's a good thing in many ways, which is investment's good. But there are some flavours of private equity which are not necessarily as good as others. Mm. And so, you know, the Everton situation recently was a case in point there. So I think we have to definitely keep a very close eye on who these new investors are and where the money's coming from.
Sports fans increasingly do have to hold their nose a little bit when it comes to the people that own clubs. And, you know, we're seeing in boxing, we were talking to Johnny Nelson earlier on, you know, we're seeing the bills and the fights we've always wanted to see, but there are aspects of that don't play with everybody. So that's happening increasingly more and more, isn't it?
It is. And I think, you know, this disconnection between fans and owners is a real problem. Mm. And there are some, you know, my club's Palace, and I think Steve Parish does a great job at keeping us informed and trying to stay connected to the soul of what Crystal Palace is all about. So, you know, that for me is really, really important. That people, when they buy into something, they know what they're buying. They understand the traditions and they understand how important fans are. Without fans, you know, there's nothing there. Mm. And that they are custodians of this club, you know, and they will eventually flip it. I mean, the private equity model is that after 5 or 7 years, they look to sell it after they've made some money. And so, you know, what worries me is that people haven't always got the best interest of the long term in mind.
Yeah.
Others have. Others have been tremendous owners and have held their shares for some time.
There's no signs of people losing interest and no signs of big business and you know, et cetera, around the world losing interest in sport or something to invest in.
Not at all. Mm. I mean, this is an extraordinary time for sport. It's, you know, it's one of the fastest growing sectors of the entertainment business. That's what it is. You're in the entertainment game. Mm. I'm in the entertainment game. So, for example, the average NBA franchise is now $4 billion. That's up 34% in 3 years. So the valuations of these clubs are rocketing. And that's because TV rights are growing, sponsors are coming in, more and more sponsors are coming in, more and more merchandise is being sold. There's a lot of interest, obviously, in in-play betting and in data and fantasy and video games. So all the stuff that satellites this, you know, it's an extraordinary business. So football, European football now is a $10 billion business. I mean, that's huge.
I think one of the main problems is maintaining playing standards while not flogging the athletes into the ground.
Yeah, that's going to be a big problem.
There's a big danger of that in cricket and in football. You see so many injuries.
We are out of time. We've got to go to drive. But David, thank you ever so much for coming in. The book is called Game Changers and Rainmakers, How Sport Became Big Business. It's out now. It's published by Pitch. I'll be back with you.